This is number 0011, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Yes, it is indeed me, Peter Anthony Holder, with another edition of the Stuff File program. This one, 0011. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File, we'll meet a fellow by the name of Seth Menachem. He's a filmmaker and actor, and he runs a website called lifeadvicefromoldpeople.com. He doesn't spend all of his time hanging out with old folks.
I don't live around a lot of elderly people. I just live, you know, smack in the middle of the city in Los Angeles in a neighborhood that's changing a lot. So there are these elderly people, a lot of them European Holocaust survivors, who are still in the neighborhood. And then the young generation that's moving in, the hipsters, the actors, you know. So I'm watching it shift. And I still see these people walk around. I talk to them all the time. I became close with a couple of them, and while hanging out with them on the stoop, decided I should probably start filming them.
Evan Beard is the creator of The Girlfriend App Keeper. Like the commercial says, there's an app for that.
It'll send texts and emails and an example message. So it'll use information that you input, like your girlfriend's eye color or her birthday or how long you've been dating, that sort of thing. And then it'll send messages to your girlfriend. They take advantage of that information and there's something like, hey, your birthday is in 137 days. Why don't I get you something green like your eyes? Or, you know, just use the date and the information to sort of send creative and what we think are funny things.
We'll check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman with a review of the story of the 1912 World Series called the First Fall Classic, along with some other recommended championship titles from the Diamond. That's what's coming up on Book Banter.
Plus, we have lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. By the way, the guest slater on this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0011, the person who told you it was 0011, is Ken Dog Daly, who is the founder and president of Fresh TV. You can find it on the web at freshtv.ca. He's also the host of the hip-hop show on CKUT called Masters at Work, which is heard here in Montreal. I had a pleasure of being a guest on that show this past weekend, so thanks to Ken and all the gang at Masters at Work. And again, check out the website, freshtv.ca, where you can find a lot of very interesting stuff. It's a fresh approach to television, which is why it's called Fresh TV. Let's get to the stuff here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We start off with a story that takes us to Portland, Oregon. The Mercedes driver testified he didn't see the 6-foot-tall orange rabbit. Yeah, I said an orange rabbit. I said 6 feet tall, too. Driving a pedicab because he was fumbling with a dropped cell phone. Pedicab driver Kate Altermat tells the Oregonian newspaper she finds that hard to believe, noting that she was wearing a bright orange bunny suit for Easter, and her Cascadia pedicab was lit up with reflectors and a blinking red light. She says the crash sent her flying and totaled the pedicab. She confronted the driver just this past week in a county circuit court. After a day-long trial, Judge Karen Immergut, found Edward Cespedes Rodriguez guilty of hit-and-run driving and leaving the scene of a crash that took place back on April the 12th. But Immergut cleared the 34-year-old Portland man of recklessly endangering another person. Well, at least the rabbit didn't die in this case. Elsewhere on the Stuff File program, let's talk about fine-tuning the brains of fruit flies, shall we? Because we check all kinds of things, especially in the name of science, on this program. Scientists at England's University of Oxford know how to make fruit flies scared of things they weren't scared of previously by implanting artificial memories into their brains after somehow locating and managing the precise 12 neurons that enable the flies to learn things. The implanted danger, For instance, the smell of sweat-soaked athletic shoes, why they pick that I don't know, causes the flies to scatter off at the first whiff. Well, it causes a lot of humans to scatter off at the first whiff. Most humans, not teenage boys. Meanwhile, scientists at the University of Toronto know how to make fruit flies sexually attractive to flies of both sexes and to different fly species by removing the special hydrocarbon brain cells that produce the pheromones thought to attract sex-specific mates. By the way, only the choice of partners was modified and not the horniness level, in case you were wondering. And if you were wondering, why? Moving right along, let's talk about some great art, shall we? At a Christie's auction in September in New York City, London artist Gavin Turk's empty, nondescript cardboard box, but the size of an ordinary moving company box, sold for $16,000. Actually, it was a sculpture designed to look exactly like an empty, nondescript cardboard box. Okay, you know, I moved into my house just about 5 years ago now, and I still have a few boxes from King's Transfer Van Lines in my house. I'm wondering if I could take them to a gallery somewhere and get $16,000 for them. What do you think the odds are of that? No, I didn't think so either. While we're on the topic of art, on the opening day of a Tate Modern Gallery exhibit in London on October 14th, 12,500 visitors examined Polish artist Mirosław Bałka's installation of a 100 by 42 by 32 foot box that is pitch black inside, lined with light-absorbing material. Why is it we're doing all kinds of art stories with boxes today? It seems to be a trend. Anyway, only one of the patrons managed to bump hard enough into a wall of the container to draw blood. Apparently, people kept walking into it. It's a good thing this is in the Tate Museum in London and not any museum in the United States, because any museum in the United States would now have a lot of lawsuits. Okay, let's check the police blotter, shall we? See what's happening in the police reports under the headline of "Somebody's Really a Little Sensitive." In St. Paul, Minnesota, police were called to the 1300 block of DeSoto Street in July by a 43-year-old man who demanded that a report be filed because he had found a slice of half-eaten pizza near his fence and thought it represented someone's intent to harass him. He called the cops. Meanwhile, a 56-year-old man was cited by police in Carlisle, Pennsylvania in September after a complaint from neighbor Brian Taylor, age 43, who swore that the man had flicked a toothpick onto the sidewalk in front of Taylor's home just to annoy him. Well, if that's what he was really trying to do, it apparently seems to have worked. Okay, let's check fetishes on parade out there. There are all kinds of people who are into all kinds of things for all kinds of kinky reasons. There but for the grace of God, apparently, go I, or whatever their case may be. I don't know, but in September in Truro, England, David Truscott, age 40, was sentenced to 4 months in jail for repeatedly trespassing onto the farm of Clive Roth by playing in the farmer's manure spreader while wearing only his underwear and, curiously, rubber gloves. Truscott told the court that he had a sexual fetish for manure. Ooh. Bet he'd like to hang around with some of the fruit flies from our previous stories. Also, 3 weeks earlier, in a similar situation, Gary Moody, age 49, was charged in federal court in Portland, Maine, with lingering inside a pit toilet in the White Mountain National Forest. He admitted to having an outhouse problem, and I'm doing air quotes here when I say an outhouse problem. Moody was not caught in the act, but because he had pleaded no contest to a similar incident in 2005, he was a prime suspect and eventually confessed. I share those stories about fetishes with you, and then I come up with a next story which has the headline "Embarrassing," which is part of the problem with the last two stories, because those two guys aren't embarrassed by their fetishes, and maybe they should be. But here's a story under the headline of "Embarrassing." Zach Schultz of Denver became the most recent victim of wind, costing him his car. While driving down Colorado Boulevard in July, he tossed a lit cigarette out the window, but it landed in the back seat of the car and set it on fire and he was unable to save the vehicle. Oopsie. You know, when I was a kid, I was a picky eater, and as a result, I'm probably a picky adult, so I understand what it's like to say no to foods and not even want to try things, and I understand the frustration of adults when they want you to eat things that perhaps you should be eating, but you feel you don't want to. So read along with me, or just listen along in any case, to this next story, although I do not feel any sympathy for this teacher. Usually, middle school kids can't get enough pizza. But in Deltona, Florida, one kid did not like it, and now a teacher's assistant has been suspended for allegedly trying to force the poor kid to eat it. 60-year-old Daniel Marquis reportedly held the pizza to the student's mouth and continued trying to force him to eat it until another staff member stepped in. Marquis also told the student that he was, quote, spoiled and his mother did not make him try any food. According to the report, Marquis then yelled at another worker in front of the students. Marquis's version is that he politely asked the student to try the pizza and stopped offering it when the student refused. The school board didn't see it that way and suspended him without pay for 3 days. Meanwhile, you may have heard about this news story in the news a couple of days ago, dealing with the World Series, which is going on seemingly forever. There are fans out there, and then there are fans out there. 43-year-old Susan Finkelstein may be the biggest Phillies fan in the world. She was arrested and charged with offering sex for World Series tickets on the website Craigslist. Apparently there's a lot of people offering sex on Craigslist. But Finkelstein says, "I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm not embarrassed by my actions. I'm embarrassed about how I was arrested." The University of Pennsylvania graduate said she had wanted to take her husband to a game to see their beloved Phillies. Her lawyer, William J. Brennan, said his client was merely a nice lady overcome with Phillies fever. Oh, that's what you call a Philly fanatic. He also says while she might have dropped a few double entendres in her Craigslist advertisement, she never explicitly offered sex. Brennan hopes to get the misdemeanor charge of promoting prostitution dismissed. So she was doing it for her husband. You know, her husband's probably thinking, oh, that's my wife. The things she'll do for the Phillies and me. God love her. Perhaps putting that up on Craigslist might have been bad advice. And while we're talking about advice, that's a segue into our first guest segment. Our first guest joins us via the wonderful technology that is Skype to Skype communications. Now, despite their life experiences, old people don't always give the best advice. So says Seth Menachem, who compiles words of wisdom from his elderly neighbors on a website that is really, really sweet. It's called lifeadvicefromoldpeople.com. Hey, Seth, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how are you, Peter?
I'm doing fine. This is a rather unique concept you've come up with. How did you come up with it? Do you live around a lot of elderly people?
I don't live around a lot of elderly people. I just live, you know, smack in the middle of the city in Los Angeles in a neighborhood that's changing a lot. So there are these elderly people, a lot of them European Holocaust survivors, who are still in the neighborhood. And then the young generation that's moving in, the hipsters, the actors, you know, So I'm watching it shift, and I still see these people walk around. I talk to them all the time. I became close with a couple of them, Frank and Abe in particular. And while hanging out with them on the stoop, decided I should probably start filming them because I would talk to them, you know, and ask them if they could give me advice on things. And I thought it would be really interesting to start filming it because I thought other people would enjoy it. And I did a test run. And I filmed them, and I put it up on the website, and immediately people seemed to react really well to it and loved it.
What caught my eye about this whole concept was when I was a kid, I had a paper route. And when you deliver papers, at some point during the course of the week, you have to go and collect the money from the people who you delivered papers to. And in one particular apartment building I had, it was mostly seniors. And it took me forever to collect the money because they didn't have a lot of contact with a lot of people, and when I knocked on the door, they always had a story to tell, and I found the stories fascinating. It would take me all night to collect.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest problem with that for me is when you put on the camera and it's something for the web and you have an audience with an attention span of 2 minutes, it's hard to get them to give you a good sound bite. So I do a lot of editing afterwards, and I try to just, keep in the stuff that I think people would find the most important, even though I love hearing their stories. But I don't know if I can't put up half-hour interviews with people.
I tend to agree, although I do think you might be surprised when it comes to the attention span, because I think deep down inside, everybody, to a certain degree, whether it's grandparents, old neighbors, or the old country, depending where somebody is from, they've had contact at some point with an older person. And it kind of flips a switch when you watch and hear what somebody has to say about life experiences.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess I could test it and see. But my feeling is generally when people are going through here, they like reading the little blurb about the person. And I think anything over, a few minutes, people start to lose interest. I mean, I don't know for sure, but, that's my feeling. But you never know. I'd love to put up some of these longer interviews. I've had some amazing people. And when I really do find them fascinating, regardless of whether I think the audience will like it or not, I've put up some pretty, Molly Pierre, for instance, I think I have 2 5-minute interviews with her just because I think they were great, and she's fascinating and an amazing woman and has just so much to teach, and there's a lot to learn from her.
Well, tell us about some of the people that you have up on the site, lifeadvicefromoldpeople.com.
It's really a cross-section of my neighborhood more than a cross-section of the world. I interview anyone I meet, wherever I go. I just was at lunch. I saw an interesting older couple. This is right before I got home, half an hour ago. They look like a nice couple. I went over to talk with them. I told them about what I did. And there are people who say no, but they were like, really happy to do it. The wife was shy. He told me he's been married 47 years. And he gave me advice, some silly, essentially let your wife win the fights and how to have a long relationship. But an interesting guy who's Armenian, whose family had escaped the genocide in Turkey, a Christian family that escaped the genocide and ended up in Jerusalem, and now has been here for 50 years. But you meet just really cool people who have had all kinds of stories, have lived their lives, in various ways, which to me is the most fascinating. I just love the choices people make in life. Bad, good and in between. People make really interesting choices in life. And I've put some celebrities on when I've met them. I did a commercial with Errol Morris. So I asked him while he was filming me in the commercial, he's a documentarian who won the Academy Award for Fog of War. I asked him if I could interview him and told him about the project. And he thought it was cool. And he said, sure. And John Voight, I saw in the neighborhood and interviewed him. And I've met some pretty cool, interesting people. And I love them all.
I'm reminded of Tom Brokaw's book about the Greatest Generation. And I'm wondering, when you collect the information that you gather of these seniors, that you find that there is a core, at the core, something about that particular generation that says volumes, and maybe even looks at some of the inadequacies that my generation or your generation might have as compared to theirs.
You definitely see differences. I'll sit with Abe, who's 90 years old, came out of a Holocaust generation, escaped the war by going to Russia, ended up in a prison, Israel, America, had a very crazy, crazy life. And he sees these kids on Fairfax in my neighborhood. We had these old, restaurants and like little kosher stores that have all shut down. And in their place, we have like hip hop shops and, cool sneaker companies. There's a big sneaker culture out there now, and these kids will line up down the street for Supreme to get the newest limited edition sneaker. And Abe asked one of the kids, excuse me, what are you in line for? And the kid told him, it's for these sneakers, man. And Abe said, how much is a pair of sneakers? And the kid, I'm sure lying to him because they're more than $100, told them they were $100. And Abe said to me, I can't believe it. Young people spending $100 on a pair of sneakers. To him, it's the most baffling thing in the world. He came, and that, the difference in generations. They came, they worked their asses off, and they saved all of their money so they could raise families, so they can invest in property, so they could better their lives. And the idea of having extra income and spending it on something like sneakers is so foreign to them. You know, Frank, another guy I interviewed, literally went to prison in Siberia simply because he didn't have shoes and couldn't work, and it was illegal not to show up at the factory when he was in Siberia escaping the war. And he had to make a pair of shoes out of a piece of wood, hardwood, and string. And that's how he had to walk around. And so, you know, there's definitely huge differences in our generation and theirs in that sense.
In putting this together, I'm sure you're learning a lot about these people. But in doing so, are you learning anything about yourself?
I am. I it's all a reminder to me. Like, it's a reminder to enjoy your life. It's a reminder how short life is. It's a reminder to make sure to be doing the things you love. And it's really nice to, I like to meet people and get their stories anyway. It's just something I enjoy doing. But I also think there's something really important in getting to know how people live their lives and getting to see the mistakes they made as well as the right choices they made. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but I learn a lot in people's mistakes. You know, not everyone gives good advice, and I don't mind, because there's something to be said for, you know, seeing the things that people did wrong. They may talk to you about love, about marriage, and you realize they're really lamenting the loss of a marriage they didn't try hard enough with, or whatever the case may be. So there's always something to be learned, without a doubt. I had a father who died young, and as a result, I always thought life's very short. You know, I'd learned that lesson very young, and to make sure to do what I love, and which is why I moved across the country from Miami to Los Angeles to work as a writer and an actor, because my understanding was that life is very short, and that, God forbid, like my father, at 48, you find out you have cancer and you're going to die. I want to be able to look back at my life and say I did the things I love. And when my father was sick, we asked him, you know, is there anything you'd like to do, Dad? Like, anything you could think of, we'll do it. And there wasn't. He wanted to be around his family. Like, he'd essentially built the life for himself that he wanted to lead. And I would like to do that same thing for myself.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned that you're a writer and an actor. And in setting this interview up with you, we spoke a little bit beforehand. And ironically, you mentioned that you heard a previous program that we did, in which we talked to Howard Fine, who was your acting teacher at one point.
Yeah. Howard Fine is a great acting coach. I studied with him for, I don't know, 5-6 years, up until his master class, and only stopped doing it because I got busy. I sold a show to Starz with my writing partner, and the two of us are writing a TV show at Starz right now that we'll both star in. Hopefully it gets picked up. We're writing 5 episodes right now for them. And I would still study with Howard if I had the time. I loved him, and there was a lot to learn from Howard. He's not an old person. I don't know, is he 50 now? I forget how old he is.
51 in November, by the way.
51 in November. So Howard, not an old person, but a wise person. And there's a lot to learn from just being an actor and finding the most real way to express yourself.
Very quickly, your website, lifeadvicefromoldpeople.com, where do you see this going? Do you see the potential of this maybe even becoming a documentary film some point down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought of anything. I just liked the idea, and I did it for no reason. It was my passion project. And since then, people have been contacting me, people like you, for interviews, and some managers and publishers, and asked me to put together a book proposal and maybe doing a life advice series. I just started a lifeadvicefromclergy.com. And so I just put up my first rabbi on the site. Really interesting, funny rabbi with a different perspective on life. And so I might keep it going. Like, keep the blogs, because I enjoy them, and maybe turn it into a book or a documentary at some point. Well, but for now, I'm doing it for, you know, no money. I just enjoy it, and I get a lot out of it.
Well, you certainly hit upon something, and it's one of those kind of things that online really do bring people together. It's a great site. It's lifeadvicefromoldpeople.com. It's put together by Seth Menachem. And Seth, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Oh, of course. Thanks so much, Peter.
Filmmaker and writer Seth Menachem, the guy behind the website lifeadvicefromoldpeople.com. You can also find the link by going to my website at peteranthonyholder.com and clicking on the What's On page for this show. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi, this is Ben Patrick Johnson, voiceover actor, male model, and all-around nice guy, some days. When I'm not voicing blockbuster movie trailers, TV promos, or doing charity work like this, I also write novels. I have four of them out, and I know it's a gift. Anyway, my latest novel is actually my most personal. It's called If the Rains Don't Cleanse, which tells the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, loosely based on my own parents. Everyone thinks you should read it, including me, of course. You can order it right now. It's just a mouse click away at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You'll find links for it, along with several reviews, on the podcast page at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Remember the title, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, by me, Ben Patrick Johnson. Buy a copy because, I got to be frank, doing voiceover liners for Peter Anthony Holder's podcast, it isn't exactly paying the bills. If the Rains Don't Cleanse. You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the Stuff File program, we'll meet the creator of the Girlfriend Keeper app. We'll also check the mailbag, plus Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter, and of course, more Stuff File and a Stuff File Idiot of the Day. Speaking of Stuff File, let's check more stories, starting with one that comes under the headline of absolute chutzpah. In the tiny East Texas town of Tenaha, police allegedly extorted traveling motorists by subjecting them to bogus traffic stops, perhaps finding small amounts of drugs, and then offering to forego prosecution if the motorists would forfeit their cars and other property. The forfeited items were then sold to fund a special police recreation account. Well, last year, the ACLU of Texas filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against both the police and local prosecutor Linda Russell. And in September, Russell asked the state attorney general if she could pay her legal expenses from the alleged extorted recreation account. How's that for chutzpah? Absolute gall. Under the headline of, if having lunch with a stripper in a cemetery is wrong, I don't want to be right. In Columbia, South Carolina, 66-year-old Deputy Assistant Attorney General Roland Corning has been fired. A police officer found him on his lunch break with a stripper and sex toys in his sports utility vehicle while parked in a secluded part of a downtown cemetery. As the officer approached, Corning first sped off, then pulled over a few blocks away. He and the 18-year-old woman who was with him, an employee of the Platinum Plus Gentlemen's Club, gave conflicting stories about what they were doing in the cemetery. Ah, yes, the plot thickens. The officer then searched the SUV, where he found a Viagra pill and several sex toys, items Corning said he always kept with him, just in case. Just in case what? While he's not facing any criminal charges, his boss, Attorney General Henry McMaster, issued a statement saying, "We received credible information about inappropriate behavior Monday afternoon, and by the end of business day, he was no longer working here." There you go. What's up with South Carolina's political leaders? First, there's Governor Mark Sanford's mysterious disappearance when he was in Argentina visiting his mistress. Then the infamous "you lie" outburst from Congressman Joe Wilson. Now this? Is South Carolina vying to become the U.S.'s most loony state? It certainly is in the running. Okay, on to Rapid City, South Dakota. A 60-year-old South Dakota man has been sentenced to 4 years in prison for robbing a bank in the city of Rapid City. Police said Lonnie Pinnell walked into the downtown Dakota Bank on February 5th without a weapon and demanded money. He got away with about $2,800. Pinnell was arrested less than 24 hours later when his car ran out of gas near Chardron, Nebraska. A court document said that when Pinnell was booked into jail, he named robbery as his occupation. Pinnell, who also goes by the last name King, pleaded guilty in July. I guess he's now retired. And we go to Berlin. A 41-year-old man in Germany, due to face questioning over theft, got himself into even more trouble by squeezing in another robbery on the way to the police station. It was a case of just nipping out to do a bit of thieving before being interrogated for shoplifting, police said. Officers were following up a supermarket robbery in the town of Blomberg with detailed descriptions of two thieves and their getaway car when they had to return to the police station. To their amazement, they said they discovered a man at the reception waiting to be interrogated for shoplifting who looked suspiciously like one of the pair wanted for the morning raid. Outside, they said they found his accomplice sitting with the stolen goods in a car with a matching license plate. Now the man faces a second set of charges, police said. Still with crime, in Springfield, Massachusetts, 25-year-old DeMont Weaver allegedly robbed a woman as she was pulling money out of her wallet for bus fare at the bus stop. He then got on the bus, so the victim ran to get her boyfriend, and the couple followed the bus to a restaurant where Weaver got out, then went inside and started filling out a job application. So they called the police. When Weaver saw his victim watching him, he ran out of the restaurant but was quickly captured by police. He then pleaded guilty to unarmed robbery in Springfield District Court. And everybody can now just relax and go back to what they were doing. The world is safe again from Thong Man. 55-year-old Richard E. Irby of Tallahassee, Florida, is the man who earned that moniker of Thong Man, as he had a bad habit of riding around town on his bicycle wearing only a thong Speedo. At 6'3", 220 pounds, and completely bald, it was a sight to behold. Unfortunately, not too many people wanted to behold it, and Irby was arrested for exposing himself in three different instances. These were not necessarily intentional exposures, it's just that with nothing but a thong, Mr. Irby tends to hang out a bit at times. So he reached an agreement with prosecutors to drop the case if he A, never goes bike riding with a thong again, and B, stays free of any legal problems for 3 months. Irby later told reporters, "I finally found bike shorts that come down to my knee." And that's good news for all of us. Yes. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, 25-year-old Charles Cheese Hurd was up on charges for murder for a nightclub stabbing incident. The victim was 29-year-old Robert Barrett, and if you can believe this, prosecutors said that Hurd was after Barrett's gem-encrusted pendant of the Flintstones Bam Bam character. Yes, really. Anyway, during the first day of the preliminary hearing, just as a star witness was asked whether she recognized anyone as responsible for Barrett's shooting, 8 reputed gang members stood up in unison, crossed their arms, and stared at the witness. Prosecutor Michael Swartz said this was done after the gang members got a signal from Hurd and voraciously objected, calling the incident blatant witness intimidation. But the witness identified Hurd anyway, and after the hearing, the 8 men were arrested on suspicion of gang-related witness intimidation. Another witness later testified how he, and not a robber, had taken the jeweled Bam Bam pendant from the dying man, saying, "I knew I could get it back to the family. It was the proper thing to do." What? Over Bam Bam? Seriously? Wow. Anyway, you'd think it'd be pretty hard to get arrested just for doing your wash down at the laundromat. But in East Naples, Florida, 59-year-old James T. Lowe showed us just how wrong you are. Police found him sitting outside the laundromat with no pants on because, he said, his pants were inside being washed. Lowe, who is homeless, also had an open container of booze, which didn't help the situation. He was arrested for indecent exposure in public, trespassing, having an open container of alcohol in a public area, and resisting an officer without violence. The latter charge because he tried to walk away while officers were arresting him. Okay, he was walking away. Not running away, walking away. Are they just charge happy? Is there a big sale going on charges and they have to pile them on when they can? I don't know what the situation there is. Anyway, let's move along to our next guest, shall we? If you watch commercials for the iPhone, you always hear the tagline, "There's an app for that." Well, there's a new one out there. Forgetful boyfriends can now use their iPhones to keep their ladies happy. The Girlfriend Keeper iPhone application assures every birthday, anniversary, and detail of a relationship doesn't go unnoticed by sending the woman in a man's life texts and emails that show how much he really cares. On the line with us right now from Annapolis, Maryland, is Evan Beard, the creator of the Girlfriend Keeper app. Hi, Evan. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on with us. So,
thank you for having me.
As I said in the intro, the commercial says there's an app for everything. There really is an app for everything. How did you come up with this one?
So my friend James Shuloff and I, we were trying to come up with an iPhone app to build. We had two or three weeks to do it, and my girlfriend was calling at the time, so we just sort of decided, wouldn't it be funny and sort of a creative idea if we made an app that could contact her significant other automatically?
Well, since you came up with this idea while your girlfriend was calling you, now that you've done this, what does your girlfriend say?
She was pretty opposed to the idea at first, but then she sort of warmed up to it and agreed that it was funny, admitted that it was funny, should I say, and then she became a part of it and actually helped her write some of the messages and stuff like that, so... She's now a conspirator, co-conspirator.
Okay, well, before we get into the details of some of the things that one can do with the Girlfriend Keeper, I've got to ask for equal opportunity purposes. Is there an app coming out or a complimentary one called the Boyfriend Keeper?
There is, actually, just to be fair. So there is a Boyfriend Keeper application as well.
Okay, so let's start with the Girlfriend Keeper. What kinds of things does it do besides what I mentioned already in the introduction?
Yeah, so you gave a pretty accurate representation. It'll send texts and emails and an example message. So it'll use information that you input, like your girlfriend's eye color or her birthday or how long you've been dating, that sort of thing. And then it'll send messages to your girlfriend that take advantage of that information and are something like, hey, your birthday is in 137 days. Why don't I get you something green like your eyes or... just use the date and the information to sort of send creative and what we think are funny things.
Now, it all sounds very, very nice, but sounds like a lot of fun as well. But do you ever worry about, and not in particularly in your case, but other people who use this, the backlash that people might have when they realize that this genuine concern isn't genuine?
Yeah, actually, it's gotten an incredible amount of press, which... really sort of surprised us. We thought it was funny, but we didn't know that many other people would think it's funny. And one of the local television shows interviewed people on the street, and they all gave pretty negative opinions of it and just said, I think this is horrible. This represents sort of the worst of this century or information century that we've come to where people are becoming so detached. But I think what I would say to those people is, I see your point, but I think, it's just meant to be sort of a tongue-in-cheek application to make people laugh and that sort of thing.
I look at the other side of the coin. We live in such a busy world today, and everyone's got PDAs with agendas in them, and they use it to keep track of important dates because we have too many dates in our head, too many passwords, too many items to deal with.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot to keep track of.
When did you first come up with this idea, and when did it become available, and how quickly has it become, as you say, a media attention grabber?
So I think it first came out in July, or maybe the beginning of August, around then, and then for the first few weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, no one really paid attention to it, but in September it started to pick up, and first, we got a few people were talking about it on Twitter, and it really was amazing. It sort of showed how things can start off on sort of the social media network like Twitter, Facebook, and then it spread, and I guess a few people saw it. A radio show picked it up in California, and they did a brief interview. And from there, then I guess a couple local televisions picked it up, stations picked it up, and then Good Morning America did a short clip. And so it was really pretty incredible and interesting to watch it sort of spread through the internet and how people thought it was just sort of an interesting concept.
Okay, back to one of my earlier questions. How does the Girlfriend Keeper differ from the Boyfriend Keeper?
So they don't differ all that much. I get the messages are slightly different, but they're pretty similar. You know, that you set the seriousness of your relationship, and the messages would differ based on that. And that's, you know, that's a feature for both the boyfriend keeper and the girlfriend keeper. So they don't differ all that much.
Now, I see one of the downsides of this. If you have the girlfriend keeper and it's sending messages to your girlfriend, does it send you a message as well? Do you have to keep abreast of what you're saying to your girlfriend in case she comes back and says, oh, that's so sweet, that's so cute, that's so romantic, and you're going, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it actually has a history log, so you can see what it sent to your girlfriend and or boyfriend and be sort of abreast of the news and what you should know that you've said, because I think it is important to know what you've said.
I also would gather that one of the downsides, you know, there's always somebody out there who's going to find a nefarious reason to use anything that's out there when it comes to technology. I would assume that some philandering guys out there could have that app to keep track of multiple wives and or girlfriends.
That is true. We have gotten a ton of requests for that. So that's something we're actually working on, is to build in support for more than one girlfriend. And that's something that just sort of surprised us. I'm sure that a few people would have requested that, but we never would have guessed that so many people would want to put in multiple girlfriends. So
what do you think that says, the number that you've been receiving? What do you think that says about society in general?
You know, I'm not one to judge too much, but it is interesting. I guess I would interpret it as people are, you know, using the term girlfriend loosely and just sort of interpreting it as friend who's a girl or someone that you're maybe flirting with a little bit. And I wouldn't make too wide of a judgment on it. But I do think it's interesting that's sort of the culture, to be, you know, flirting with a lot of people at once.
In our very capitalistic society, there's always someone who's looking to make a dollar on something like this. And I'll ask you in a moment if you're, you know, going to be making any coin on this. But I see the advantages of potential sponsors and businesses jumping on this bandwagon of yours.
Yeah, it would be great. And actually, what we're working on now is a much more serious version of the Girlfriend Keeper. We've never announced it yet, so this is sort of our unofficial announcement, but to keep track of all your contacts, because every person, just think of it, you've got so many people you've met in all different parts of your stages of your life, whether it's university or, you know, secondary school or post-university, your first job, second job, and in all these different areas you meet new people, and a lot of them you want to keep in touch with. But even with Facebook and Twitter, people will pop up and you'll remember to get in touch with them, but there really is no way to manage all those people that you've met and that you want to keep in contact with. And it is important to maintain your relationships and your contacts, to get in touch and sort of ping your friend at least every few months. So we're working on a software right now that will help you do that.
What is your business or educational background? Is this a business that you're in, or is this a business that you fell into?
So I just graduated from university about 6 months ago.
Right.
So I just decided to, you know, the Girlfriend Keeper was sort of our first go at something that generated revenue. And then other than that, I do web design, web development. And so, but I'm always looking for, you know, a good idea and trying to build a really great product. So this will be sort of my next try, is the software that I just described.
And are you making some money with it? You don't have to tell us, you don't have to give us figures, but are you making some coin on this?
Yeah, we're making a little bit. It's really not generating all that much. To be honest, it's generating a lot more publicity than revenue. I think people think that it's a really interesting concept, and the website gets a ton of hits, but I don't think that a lot of people are inclined to actually buy it, because, you know, they I don't know whether it's because they don't want people or they don't want a piece of software to be emailing their significant other for them, or whether, you know, the joke sort of ends at looking at it. But a couple thousand people have bought it, so that's good. But it really isn't, it's not winning the lottery for sure.
Well, it's a great concept nonetheless. People can check out the website, www.girlfriendapp.com. That's with two P's, APP.com. That's www.girlfriendapp.com. I thank you very much, Evan, for taking the time to be on the program with us to talk about this.
Thank you, Peter. I enjoyed it.
Evan Beard, the creator of the Girlfriend Keeper app. Again, you can check out the website at www.girlfriendapp.com. You can also find the link by going to my website, peteranthonyholder.com, and clicking on the What's On page for this show, which again is 0011. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time to check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And on this edition of the mailbag, we have a message that comes to us via Facebook. It comes from Julian, and it's one that I've received many times over about the equipment I used for doing this program. Julian goes on to say, enjoyed your 0009 edition. What mic are you using? Oddly enough, the sound isn't as compressed as the AM band, so it's refreshing to hear a huge difference. One for the internet, zero for radio. So I figured I'd answer definitively what equipment I'm using in this studio. I have a home studio, as I've mentioned on several occasions. We're using a Rode microphone. It's an NT2000 mic, a Mackie board, 14-channel board. It's a great board. You can drive nails in with this thing. Also, a DBX 266XL compressor gate, and it's all going into my computer. So there you go. There's your technical question for you, for those who were asking. Actually, up next on the mailbag, this time around, I want to send a shout-out, speaking of technical. This one goes to Scott Neary. You may remember we talked to him on the last show about teaching people how to juggle. Well, in addition to being a juggler, actor, contortionist, and an all-around funny guy, he's also pretty handy with web work. No, not like Spider-Man, but on the net I'm talking about. Scott was kind enough to do some graphic work for my website, taking the time out of his busy schedule, so I really, really want to thank him for that. He also created the new Stuff File logo that you can see both on my blog and also at the Stuff File group on Facebook. And by the way, if you haven't joined the group on Facebook, hit pause on this program right now and go and do it right away. Thank you. Thank you again to Scott Neary for all your work and your support. Believe me, it is very, very, very much appreciated. And that's the mailbag. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And Stuart Nullman is here again with another edition of Book Banter as we talk about the fall classic, which slowly leads into winter almost these days.
Well, also the football, hockey. Yeah. But hey, we like our baseball books.
I mean, here we are in November now, and they're still playing baseball.
Yeah, which is what I like about, Division Series, League Championship Series, and World Series.
That's what I don't like about it. It's the boys of summer. But anyway.
Not of winter.
Exactly.
But we're going to look at a book called The First Fall Classic, because you know you're a baseball fan, Peter, like I am, and we know for over 60 years, one of the most volatile classic rivalries in Major League Baseball has been between the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees.
You have to start the sentence with, my beloved Boston Red Sox.
Well, your beloved.
And those damn Yankees.
I mean, those Bronx Bombers.
There you go.
Well, nearly a century ago, there was also an intense Boston-New York baseball rivalry. But this time it was against the Red Sox and the National League New York Giants to see who would be the world's champions of professional baseball. Now, we're going back to 1912, and the World Series between the Bo Sox and the Giants, it basically turned the World Series, which was then in its ninth year, into the highly anticipated, highly regarded, and much celebrated sports championship playoff that is known today. Now, those eight fateful afternoons in October 1912 have been well recaptured in Mike Vaccaro's account, The First Fall Classic. Now, this is the year of Smokey Joe Wood, who was playing with the Red Sox, was the most dominant pitcher in the American League, and the Red Sox new home, Fenway Park. And then on the other side of the fence, you got the National League champion New York Giants, who were looking for their first world championship since 1905, and skippered by the very feisty John J. McGraw, and who also had a leader on the mound, and that was Christy Mathewson, a future Hall of Famer who was in twilight of his career. Now, the excitement level created by both of the team's fans was much higher than the previous nine World Series, including the famous Royal Rooters from Boston, who were led by its colorful mayor, John Honey Fitzgerald, who, if you know your politics, he was the grandfather of John F. Kennedy. And it got to the point where fans were lining up outside the Polo Grounds in Fenway Park the night before each game to purchase their tickets. And for those who were not able to see the game at each ballpark, flocked to the offices of their daily newspapers to see the games faithfully reproduced on a playograph system, which helped bring everyday life to a virtual standstill. In fact, the 1912 World Series stole the headlines from the major news event of the day, which was the 1912 presidential election. It was a tight three-way race, and President William Howard Taft, the incumbent president, who knew he wasn't going to win the election, he couldn't even arrange a campaign appearance near Boston. He couldn't curtail it because he wanted to see a game that was being played at Fenway, one of the World Series games, but he couldn't make the time for it.
Right.
Mike Vaccaro uses his sports writer skills to its fullest extent to recreate the highly charged atmosphere of the 1912 World Series at the height of the dead ball era, where, you know, base hits and not home runs were the order of the day. And through a great deal of diligent research, from contemporary newspaper accounts to interviews of many of the participants decades after the series, this book shows that the 1912 World Series launched the concept of the tension-filled team rivalries, the greed of team owners, and all the other aspects that made the World Series a media event and a rite of fall that no baseball fan should miss. In fact, this is the first time that newspapers dubbed the World Series as the Fall Classic. But this is a very highly readable time warp to the point in baseball history that turned a simple league versus league playoff into a virtual battle on the diamond field for baseball supremacy.
Mm.
And the book is called The First Fall Classic by Mike Vaccaro, published by Doubleday Books, and it's $38.
Excellent. Now, when it comes to baseball books, is this one of the better ones you've read?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it because he really gets into all the details of what made this World Series such a significant one. And if you like reading about World Series or about the dead ball era, I got three recommendations, actually. I got two from David Halberstam, Summer 49, which deals with a very intense New York Yankee-Boston Red Sox rivalry, which ended up in a playoff for the American League title. October 1964, which dealt with the New York Yankees-St. Louis Cardinals World Series and how, basically it was almost like a parallel the civil rights era of the 60s, including the famous boneheaded trade, in which the Cubs traded Lou Brock to the Cardinals.
Hmm.
Remember that one?
Yes.
And if you'd like to read a bit more about the dead ball era from the point of view of the players, check out Lawrence Riddick's classic 1966 book, The Glory of Their Times, which he interviews many of those players from that era, including Smokey Joe Wood and Rube Marquardt, who pitched for the Giants in the 1912 series. And you get a very first-hand look at baseball in its early formative years. And Riddick was very lucky to, you know, speak to these veterans in the twilight of their lives. And it's regarded as one of the classics of baseball literature.
Excellent. And when we talk about great baseball books, I mean, there are some out there. Ball Four has to be one of the top.
Oh, exactly.
Everyone always mentions that. Nice Guys finished last, one of my favorites,
yeah.
Leo DeRocher. And The Umpire Strikes Back.
By the late Ron Luciano.
Ron Luciano. And there was a book of baseball quotes I remember, but I can't remember the title of it. And I'm having another senior moment here. The first the first black player in the American League.
Larry Doby.
Larry Doby, Chicago White Sox.
Cleveland Indians.
And they asked him back in the day when he first became the first black player in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
They asked him if one of the reporters in a scrum asked him if they ever thought that God should have made his skin lighter. And he said, no, just thicker. And that was one of my favorite quotes of all time.
How appropriate.
Anyway, thank you very much, Stuart, for being here once again. Where can people find you, by the way, besides being on our show?
Well, you can read me every week in the West End Times or go to www.westendtimes.ca and you could read Book Banter every week.
Thank you, Stuart.
You're welcome, Peter.
That's Stuart Nallman with another edition of Book Banter. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have time for a Stuff File story and an idiot of the day. And you'd think this first one would be the idiot of the day, but no, it's not. We put this under the headline of questionable business model. In September, in downtown Longview, Washington, a 23-year-old man held up a sign offering to be kicked in the groin for $5. He made one sale before police, acting on a complaint, made him move on. Someone actually paid him $5 to kick him in the groin. Wow. That's not a long-term career move or path, is it? I don't think so. Yet, as dumb as that is, that's not the idiot of the day. This is.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
In India, 26-year-old Vaibhav Bedi is suing the company Lynx, which produces the popular Axe men's body washes, shampoos, antiperspirants, hair gels, and body sprays. You've all seen the commercials, haven't you? Betty says he used all of the products for years, but still couldn't attract any women. Axe is famous for its saucy ads showing barely clothed women throwing themselves at men. In his court petition, Betty says, "The company cheated me because, in its advertisements, it says women will be attracted to you if you use Axe. I used it for 7 years, but no girl came to me." He wants $40,000 for his lonely heart. Why would a guy believe a commercial on television with a product that says women will be falling all over you if you use it, and then use it for 7 years, and then want to go to court to sue? There's only one reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
I hope he's not old enough to remember the high karate commercials from the 1960s and early 70s. Anyway, that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Of course, it's number 0011 if you've been paying attention. The website, peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and program number. And I just mentioned the number, didn't I? Yes, 0011. You can email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder. And you can find me at Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Again, please tell all your friends about the program. Let's build this audience to as big as we can get it. And we hope to see you here on the next edition of the podcast program. Until then, I'm Peter Anthony Holder. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.